Hi, it's Mike Collins. WFAE is in the midst of our fall membership campaign. We're bringing you this podcast without fundraising breaks. But first, I do have a quick pitch before we get to the show. Everything we do at WFAE is paid for by our listeners. Consider supporting Charlotte Talks right now for $20 a month, and we'll send you a Public Radio Nerd t-shirt. Give online at WFAE.org or call 704-549-9000. And thank you for your support. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. 308 days after the polls closed, the 2018 midterm is over.
I'm going to roll up my sleeves and get to work on behalf of the families and the taxpayers of the 9th District.
Mecklenburg State Senator Dan Bishop is now a congressman-elect after Tuesday's special election, the last remaining race from last year's election to be settled, and a race that was being portrayed as a bellwether for Republicans nationwide going into 2020. The election ended one chapter in the 9th District saga that's been underway since rumblings of ballot fraud first surfaced last winter. Republicans pulled out all the stops on Bishop's behalf, including an Election Eve campaign appearance by the president, and the result was a more than two-point victory over Democrat Dan McCready, who last night referenced the fraud scandal.
When they perpetrated the largest case of election fraud in recent American history, we fought back and we won. We were not successful tonight, but I want you to remember that victory postponed is not defeat.
Meanwhile, 2 years after a Charlotte City Hall primary that saw an incumbent mayor turned out of office along with several city council members, voters went to with the status quo in Tuesday's primary, keeping Mayor Vi Lyles on her path to a second term and sticking with the city council's at-large incumbents. Someone who's not in a status quo mood is former South Carolina governor and Congressman Mark Sanford, and later this hour, he will join us to talk about why he's mounting a Republican primary challenge to Donald Trump. But first, we recap Tuesday's voting with Dr. Michael Bitzer, the political science chair at Catawba College and author of the Old North State Politics blog. Welcome back to you.
Good morning.
And Steve Harrison is here. He's WFAE's political reporter who's been following every twist and turn in the 9th District for nearly a year now. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike.
You can join our conversation via email, Facebook, or Twitter if you'd like to. So, what message did the voters send in the 9th District yesterday?
It was a district that went for Donald Trump 54% in 2016, and he won it with 12 percentage points, and Dan Bishop won it by 2 last night. So I think it is certainly, and there's a lot of threads within this election yesterday that I think we need to dissect, but yeah. I think the biggest one for here in Mecklenburg County is the continuing collapse of the Republican South Charlotte. It is now basically Democratic South Charlotte, and that has some national implications in terms of how white, more suburban-oriented voters are going to potentially behave in 2020. But I think that's one of the big ones, along with the fact that Bishop was able to really, in rural counties, be able to do better than Mark Harris did
in the contest. November. In the contest between McCready and Mark Harris, McCready lost by 905 votes. Last night, he lost, I think, by 4,160 votes, at least when I turned the TV off. That's what the count was. And you lost by 2%.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, how many voters voted last time versus this time?
So last fall was 53% voter turnout. Last night was 37% voter turnout.
So what does that tell you? That more people voted for Dan Bishop than voted for Mark Harris, or that fewer people voted for McCready?
Well, fewer people voted last night. I think
so. The partisans came out.
The partisans are out. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, that this is very typical, except in presidential years, you are only going to get the true believers, the true party loyalists in midterms and these kinds of special elections?
I think, I mean, looking at this 9th district race, if you look at the district, I think there were kind of two elections inside it. About 60% of the vote is in Mecklenburg and Union County. Mm-hmm. That was almost an exact repeat of the McCready-Mark Harris race. McCready did a little bit better in Mecklenburg County than he did in the fall. But that, those two counties played out for McCready, I think, is about as well as he could have hoped. It was the other six counties to the east where Dan Bishop really improved on Mark Harris. And there was, I don't want to use the word collapse for Dan McCready. That may be a little strong, but there was a real softening of his support.
Why?
It could have been campaign strategy. I mean, I think so much focus was put on both Mecklenburg and Union County. And the belief was if McCready could eat into Union County, which went 60-40 for Harris last fall, he could be competitive and keep it tight. Well, what happened was Union County went 60-40 again for Dan Bishop. And McCready did better in Mecklenburg than last November, but he wasn't able to make up that difference.
Does Dan Bishop have better name recognition in the counties to the east of Charlotte than Mark Harris had? Because Mark Harris was a Baptist minister here in Charlotte, so people knew who he was. Does he have better name recognition? Does his position as the most conservative state senator in the legislature, did that play a role down east?
I think that's part of it. And I think another thing is that one of the key counties in the east is Robeson County. It's a minority-majority county. And that was one that the Democrats really focused on last fall. Dan McCready won it by, I think he got 56% of the vote. Mm-hmm. He still won it this time, but only barely. There is a large Native American population. Last fall, they made a huge push to get those voters out. African Americans, it was a huge push. There was a huge effort on the part of Democrats to get people to vote by mail in Robeson County. Mm-hmm. And that went away this time. And so I think maybe out east, what you had was it kind of like when you didn't have this national momentum, the counties kind of reverted back to kind of the status quo.
And I think Bishop's campaign really focused on that eastern part because they knew that that was a conservative area. I need to get deeper into the numbers, but it looks like there were some pretty significant shifts going on. And that, I think, is attributable to both Bishop's campaign, but potentially also to President Trump coming in into Fayetteville and Cumberland in that part of the district and really energizing the base.
That was my next question. What role did President Trump's appearance on election Eve have? What effect or impact did Mike Pence and his wife and Donald Trump Jr. have when they came to the district also to stump for Dan Bishop?
The president is playing to a base strategy for next year, and I think this was a good indicator that indeed he could make it a base strategy in this kind of an election. The question is if Dan Bishop can only win this district by two when Donald Trump won it by 12, and Donald Trump won the state by less than 4. That's a pretty big swing that you have to take into account if this holds for the state as a whole.
So you don't think that the Democrats should be wringing their hands in agony this
time? I mean, a win is a win. And, you know, the ninth is not going to decide who controls the U.S. House of Representatives. Right. That's already done. And this district has voted Republican in some iteration.
But if Democrats were fired up about President Trump, and they apparently are, at least in many circles, why didn't they come out and push McCready over the edge?
Well, I think you kind of wrote about this, Michael, this week, that this district last fall, nationally, in the districts that Democrats did very well in, they were these suburban areas with a lot of college-educated mm-hmm. voters. That is half of the 9th district. They were fired up in Mecklenburg County.
Yeah.
I think McCready, last time he lost 3 precincts in the city of Charlotte. This time he only lost 1. So it happened in Mecklenburg County. But the makeup of the district is just a little different out east. And so that's the kind of territory where Democrats didn't do as well.
You got 2/3 of the vote coming from both Union and Mecklenburg last night, but that other third was really a redesign and redynamic of what we saw in November of last year. So, you know, things change and elections, you know, different focus by the campaigns have different impacts.
So let's talk about the focus. President Trump embraced Dan Bishop. Dan Bishop returned the favor.
Yes.
He is all in on Donald Trump, and he made mention of it last night in his victory speech, as you would imagine he would, and waited in gleeful anticipation of a call from the president at the podium, which I thought was unusual and interesting. Dan McCready, he seemed like he was an island unto himself. Major Democrats were not coming here. Mm-hmm. He was not seeking their help. Mm-hmm. He kept criticizing the presidential field of mm-hmm. Democratic candidates. He kept saying that he was going to go to Washington and it was going to be country over party, which mm-hmm. is admirable. Mm-hmm. But that was almost like saying, I don't want your help. I don't want to be part of you because you guys are not going to get me elected in this district. Is that accurate?
It's smart campaign strategy.
You think?
Know your district. You can't run an AOC in the 9th Congressional District of North Carolina. I'm sorry.
But when the big guys don't come and campaign for you.
Well, but that was that's a campaign strategy because what he was focused on was local issues focused on the district. What the Republicans were doing was nationalizing the race.
Precisely.
So
isn't that what this is about?
Typically, for U.S. House seats, it tends to be, what can you do for my district? And what we have seen is a transition to, you are now guilty by association based on your national party.
I mean, going back to what you said, I mean, clearly most of the Democratic presidential field would be far too left for McCready to campaign with in the 9th district. However, I mean, I did wonder, Joe Biden was in South Carolina. Would Biden, Biden did endorse him, mm-hmm. but would an appearance with Biden have been any kind of negative for McCready? Also the governor never showed up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think you have raised a good question. Like, would a little bit of pizzazz and
we have to take a break. But was that deliberate on Dan McCready's part, or was that Democrat saying, okay, you don't want my help? Fine, you're on your own.
I think it was Dan McCready's strategy from last year.
Okay.
So
we have to take a break. We're going to come back more with Dr. Michael Bitzer and Steve Harrison from WFAU News to talk about the 9th and also about the city council of races and the race for mayor as well. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
We're talking about what happened yesterday in the election, and before we continue our look at the voting patterns in the 9th District and in Charlotte, we want to tell you about a Charlotte Talks event next Tuesday night. We'll be at the Divine Barrel Brewing Company talking about recent changes affecting North Carolina's breweries and distilleries. You can join us at Divine Barrel at 7 p.m. next Tuesday. For that conversation, head to WFAE's Facebook page for more details. Should have done that last night, and the Dan McCready campaign could have joined us. Michael Bitzer is here from Catawba College, and Steve Harrison is with us also from WFAE News. Dan Bishop, as we said, strongly supports the president who came to campaign for him. He portrayed McCready as a liberal in the same camp with the dreaded squad, those four congresswomen. He called the Mueller investigation an attempted coup. What should we expect from Dan Bishop in a democratically controlled House? Which is about to go into impeachment.
Impeachment process, yeah. So I think he will be a loyal Republican. He will toe the party line. The party is now the party of Donald Trump. And he will be, I think, one of the bomb throwers from the Republicans against the Democrats. He will fit very naturally, I think, with folks like Mark Meadows from North Carolina, Mark Walker, other congressmen who are very conservative and are very much the president's allies.
It was interesting on Monday night at the Fayetteville rally with the president. Trump kind of did, I think he did, a little bit of the fake news media bit, as he always mm-hmm. does. Dan Bishop, when it was his turn to speak, he went after, as he called it, the Democrat socialist media with vengeance. Like it was with a passion that the president kind of even doesn't really summon up anymore. The president kind of goes through the motions.
You know what the president is.
He used those words and he said that Democrats and people like the squad hate America. Has that happened before in the history of this country where one party vilifies the people who belong to the other party and say that they hate the country and are dangerous to the country?
Yes, we've had that kind of rhetoric, but it is becoming, in my mind, more mainstream and very much party orthodoxy.
Can you govern like that? Can you successfully keep the United States together?
Not in this polarized environment, and not with divided government, and not with separate branches.
Do you think the people who use this, and some of this rhetoric is being tossed about on the other side as well? But
do you think that
they see this as a problem, or do they just see this as being politically expedient, or they're just ignorant of what this does to people over time?
I think it helps to rally a sense of kinship, of camaraderie, of unitedness.
At what cost?
At a cost of bitter division and a feeling of, if you're calling me un-American, then that's un-American.
So this race, the District 9 race, was considered to be a bellwether for 2020. Do you think it is? Do you think it was? Do you think that sent a message to Democrats and or Republicans?
I think there are some tea leaves that you can read out of it, but I don't think you can go full throttle and say this is what 2020 portends, just simply because the dynamics are going to be completely different. You're going to have 70% turnout next year, right, as compared to 37 last night. I think the big worry sign is the suburban fallout, particularly in Mecklenburg, but not in Union.
You know, Mecklenburg had these local races going last night, yesterday, and through early voting. Do you think, can you tell, Steve, if was the turnout better in Mecklenburg because people went out to vote not just for Dan in the 9th district, not just to vote for Dan, the two Dans, but to vote for city council and mayor?
I mean, I haven't been able to look at the data that closely, but my personal feeling would be no. I mean, I just think that the Bishop McCready race drove everything. It carried along people who also voted for city council. I mean, there were stories, you know, people who were kind of near the district or people who weren't even near the district who showed up to vote for Dan McCready or Dan Bishop because, you know, there was so much attention, so much on TV. So I really think that drove everything. And I'll just say one more kind of fun fact about this race. Bladen County, right? The epicenter of the scandal, the center of all the hijinks. Mark Harris won it, I think, had 57% of the vote in last year's race. So we've had all this investigation, supervision by the state. Dan Bishop did even better this time, after all that.
Is that vengeance? Do you think voters went to the polls in that area and say, you're going to try to overturn our will? We'll show you. Is that what was operating there? Or was it that they just liked Dan Bishop better?
I mean, right, could be. It could be.
There were 5,800 votes out of that county. So let's put things into a little bit of perspective.
Political analyst David Wasserman of the Cook Political Report says Trump's reelection depends on North Carolina.
Sure.
And a Democratic upset would be a genuine sign of danger for the president heading into 2020. So he didn't get the upset to worry about, but it was a squeaker.
Yes.
Why is North Carolina all important? Why does Trump's reelection, because you said, depend on this state? Why?
Because if Donald Trump doesn't have North Carolina in his column, then states like Wisconsin, states like Michigan, states like Pennsylvania probably have gone Democratic as well. If the Republicans want to win the White House, they have to prevent the South from being cracked by Democrats. And that means peeling off Florida. That means peeling off Virginia. That means peeling off North Carolina.
It seems to me that people in Washington, at the White House particularly, can read the tea leaves. They have their fingers in the pie, and they know what the polls are saying. If the president and the president did come to Fayetteville on Election Eve, he wouldn't have come, would he, if it looked like Bishop wasn't going to win?
I think they probably read that, you know, setting aside that the fact that the president sent out a tweet saying that Dan Bishop was down 17, you know, a couple of weeks ago and that they needed his help. I think it is just it is something that the presidents tend to do in these kind of special elections, is go in, rally the base, get them to the polls the next day. It's a smart campaign move.
And I mean, going back to the tea leaves, I just don't think either side really knew. I mean, I think they thought we were flying blind
into this election.
So I think the president had to you know, fly blind as well, and he would take his lumps today if they lost.
Yep. No, he would blame somebody else.
That's true. Yeah,
so $14 million, if I'm right, was spent on television advertising in the 9th District campaign. $14 million. Put that money into perspective in terms of other congressional races either here or elsewhere. Is that a lot of money?
It's the most, except for the Georgia special election with John Ossoff.
Which was $27 million, I think.
Where did most of that money come from?
I believe outside the district.
Yeah, outside the district.
On both sides,
yeah.
Dan McCready had amassed a really large, I think, war chest prior to the Republican primary that led to Dan Bishop being chosen as their candidate. But outside spending weighed heavily, I'm told, for Dan Bishop, 2-1 over McCready. Is that because McCready spent all his money earlier or didn't spend it right? Or does spending matter? Do these commercials work? I mean, don't partisans already know? If I'm a Republican, I'm not voting for Dan McCready. If I'm a Democrat, I'm not voting for Dan Bishop.
Right.
Does it matter anymore?
It matters in terms of framing and energizing, I think.
But the framing on both sides has a tenuous association with the truth.
And very tenuous. Welcome to modern American politics. Your point being what?
And I think what's, you know,
I'm sorry. It's just, you know,
I mean, why does anybody pay any attention to them?
Most folks, most average voters won't.
On the Panthers game on Sunday, there was an anti-McCready followed by an anti-Bishop followed by an anti-McCready followed by an anti-McCready followed by a positive McCready.
And guess who's getting all that money?
Well, yes, but I mean, I thought, well, this is just a waste of advertising dollars.
And I think you know, if you go back to last fall's race when it was the midterms in a national election, Republicans kind of had to assume Mark Harris was going to win. And there really wasn't much effort or focus or money put on this race. And really the only consistent theme attack that Mark Harris put on Dan McCready was, you will vote for Nancy Pelosi as speaker.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was about it. Republicans brought a lot more at McCready this time.
Yeah.
When does Dan Bishop take office?
I think he needs the certification from the state, and that may take a couple of days. Okay. And then it goes to the U.S. House, and he'll be sworn in within the next 2 weeks.
When does the next campaign for the 9th District begin?
Today. Filing will start in December, but Bishop will in all likelihood run again. November of 2020. I doubt that he will have a primary challenger. The Democrats will start looking at who their candidates are.
The legislature is in the midst of redrawing the legislative districts because the three-judge panel said that they were unconstitutionally partisan gerrymanders, and that's not going to fly.
State legislature.
In the state. But that's not the case with the congressional maps. What's the Ken emails? Is there any chance of the 9th district being redrawn in the near future? Well, they have to wait till the census.
Well, there's talk about a potential lawsuit in state court on the congressional districts following the lead of this decision on the state legislative districts. Mm-hmm. That may happen, whether it's in time for next March's primaries, who knows?
Would a redrawing have changed yesterday's outcome? Depends on how it's drawn.
Depends on how it's drawn.
Right. I mean, if you add just a few more precincts in Mecklenburg County that are a little more diverse,
but
more
blue. The ninth was drawn. The seat in the 9th district has been held by a Republican since John F. Kennedy.
1963.
Right, was president. So was it always drawn to be a Republican favorite or?
Pretty much, but it's been in different parts of this area. At one point it was on the western side of Charlotte, so it's moved around.
So in the local races, Steve, yesterday there's no real reason to talk about Vi Lyles. It was a foregone conclusion that she was going to be the Democratic nominee.
I think she has to be disappointed she didn't get 90%.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding. 87%.
Will there be a Republican challenger in the fall?
There is on the ballot. David Michael Rice has run a number of times in the past. Marginal candidate. It'll be kind of interesting to see. he'll get a decent amount of votes just because he's a Republican. People vote blindly.
There were seven Democrats running at large for four available at large seats. Any surprises in yesterday's outcome in those races?
I'm not sure if it's a surprise, but the big news is there were five sitting city council member running for those four seats. So that meant one person was going to get left out. That person was LaWanna Mayfield. Mm-hmm. She represents District 3 and had tried to move up for an at large seat. And so she finished fifth and she is out. I think another interesting thing in that at-large race, Julie Isolt just made it in.
Yeah.
She is the mayor pro tem, which meant she was the top vote-getter
Braxton Winston.
Braxton Winston.
Does it work like it has traditionally worked, although it hasn't the last couple of times at county commission, that the top vote-getter in this becomes the mayor pro tem? Or is that person elected by the new city council?
So they're elected by the new city council, but the city council has shown much more kind of deference to that unofficial rule of top vote-getter, where the county just discards
coming
it
out
entirely.
Of the general. Right?
Was LaWanna Mayfield hurt because not enough people outside of District 5 knew her, or was she hurt because of some of the controversial statements that she has made and tweeted over the last several years?
I have to think the tweets did not help. The Fraternal Order of the Police put out its endorsements before the race. They did not endorse her. And the group also, kind of in their release, made a specific point to say why they weren't supporting her. Mm-hmm. So I do think that the tweets on 9/11 and the police were a problem. I think another interesting thing about this race is there was so much passion about the city hosting the Republican National Convention. And I think that passion was real. I think a lot of Democrats were upset. Mm-hmm. But if you look at these results, did not matter at mm-hmm. all. LaWanna Mayfield was the biggest opposition from the get-go. Vi Lyle supported it. Didn't matter.
And Braxton's not in favor of it either, and he's the big winner yesterday, mm-hmm. along with Dimple Ejmyra coming back to her seat, James Mitchell coming back to his seat, and of course, as you mentioned, Julie Isolt. Any races of note at the district level in the time we have left?
In District 2, that is a little bit of uptown in Northeast Charlotte, Justin Harlow's seat, he did not run. Malcolm Graham won that. He is a former state senator and former council member, right. So he is coming back. And he brings a little bit of experience to this council, which will almost have complete turnover from 3 or 4 years ago.
The races in the at-large races, the people who voted yesterday and put these people into the Democratic channel for November have pretty much decided the election now, because there's not going to be significant Republican, if any.
That's right.
So do you think the people who voted yesterday knew that?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Or the people who didn't vote yesterday knew that?
You know, it is interesting. If you go back 10 years— the general election in this city for mayor and city council was a big deal, right? The old Anthony Fox, John Lasseter race that was so close. So that was just 10 years ago. And now, like you said, there are a couple Republican candidates here and there, but everything was decided yesterday.
I want to thank Michael Bitzer for being here from Catawba College, Steve Harrison from WFAE News.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.